Nice to have you back with us. Giants and Dodgers coming up, and we love to have authors on the show and about special subjects. And, of course, we've got Giants-Dodgers this weekend. And we welcome Alan Levy to the show. Alan is a professor of American history at Slippery Rock University in Pennsylvania. In addition to his writings about sports, football, boxing, and baseball, he's the author of several books on American music. But Alan is with us today because he did a wonderful biography, and I think it's so appropriate for this weekend of all the history of Giants-Dodgers baseball, a biography of manager, Hall of Fame manager, won 2,040 games, and that is Walter Alston. So, Alan, a pleasure to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Well, Walter Alston, of course, I was in Brooklyn when he was hired to manage the Dodgers back in 1954, and I remember everyone saying, "Who's he?" And I'm sure people listening to our show today are saying, "Well, why a book on Walter Alston? Now, what led you to Walter Alston?"
Well, in the first place, very simply, no one had ever done his biography before. Walter had written his own memoir, but there's never any real exploration of his background, of his minor league career, and hence any attempt really to see what made the man tick and how he worked, how he operated, how the organization worked. And it was all very revealing of what made a very effective management team, both of Alston as well as with his colleagues, Buzzy Bavazzi and Walter O'Malley and O'Malley's son, Peter. They're a very, very effective team, and looking at it in detail from the inside, seeing how it all worked.
How does Walter Alston get a job as a manager in the major leagues? Now, of course, he did put in extensive time managing in the minor leagues. He did have one major league appearance as a player. But how does it come together for him? Who is he? What's his background? How does it come together for him to manage so many years of one-year contracts with the Brooklyn Dodgers and with the Los Angeles Dodgers? How does all that come about?
The name that will pop up again and again in many contexts in his background, of course, is Mr. Branch Rickey. Mr. Rickey's organization, he was with the Cardinals, of course, back in the 1930s. And it was Mr. Rickey's scouts that first spotted Alston. He'd played baseball with Miami University of Ohio and had played some semi-pro ball in southwestern Ohio where he was from. And they picked him up had him play for a year in Mississippi, and then played in the Mid-Atlantic League in Ohio and Indiana in the 1930s. And while he was playing for Mr. Rickey, for a team in Portsmouth, Ohio, Mr. Rickey had pretty much decided, even though he brought him up at the end of the 1937 season for just a few weeks, and where he had his famous one time at bat and he struck out. But when he played for Portsmouth, Ohio, in this Mid-Atlantic League, the team wasn't doing well, and it was when Alston was still a pretty young man. He was born in 1911, so he's still, this is now 1939, so he's still only in his 30s, still very much an active player. Mr. Rickey decided to make Alston the player manager of this team in Portsmouth, Ohio, and he turned the team around very quickly. He just proved to have, Rickey has seemed to grasp this. He had the kind of good spirit nature that made everybody on the team want to pull together and work for the common good. And he took care of all the little things very nicely. And when you're a manager at a lower level, you don't have an organization in back of you. You have to run it yourself. So he was the manager. He played. He pitched. He pitched batting practice. He was the trainer. Sometimes he was the team bus driver. But he did it all, and he did it all with a very good spirit that seemed to rub off on everybody. And Rickey seemed to perceive this was a very good part of the man's character. So he kept him on in Portsmouth in the Dodger organization, in the Cardinal organization. And then that league, of course, like most minor leagues, folded during World War II. And then Rickey had switched at that point from the Cardinals to the Dodgers. Alston kept playing. He failed the Army physical. He desperately wanted to serve the country, but he couldn't make it into the service, so he played minor league ball in service to Mr. Roosevelt's desire to have a little baseball as a diversion for the working people of America. And with players of a little players thinning out in numbers all through the 1940s with the war, Alston got to play in 1943 and 44 at the AAA level in Rochester. and still with the Cardinal organization. But then he got hurt and was cut from the team in 44. And Mr. Rickey, now with Brooklyn, called him up and said, I need you to manage my team in Trenton. Will you do it? And Alston said, sure. So starting with Trenton, again, he took a bad team and turned them around, made a winner out of them in 45. And then Mr. Rickey continued with Alston in a series of teams, quite importantly in Nashua, New Hampshire, where Alston was the major league, was the manager of the first team in the minor leagues that was racially integrated, the year that Jackie Robinson played for the Montreal Royals, the year before he broke the color line in baseball. So he was part of Mr. Rickey's overall plan, both for, to build the Dodgers and to achieve notoriety in the wider world of American social history. So Alston was all part of that mix and was very successful every step of the way.
Interesting. Very. Alan Levy is with us. The book is Walter Alston. You can get it, of course, at all their usual outlets, but we support the Book Tree up in Montclair, independent bookstore. Walter Alston is the name of the book. Alan Levy wrote it, L-E-V-Y. You know, as you tell the story, I'm realizing the background of this man. He ends up winning the Junior World Series in 1953 for Montreal. And when he got the job, when Walter O'Malley gave him, Buzzy Bavese gave him the job in 1954, it shouldn't have been such a shock to the world because, as you just described, I'm glad you could do it in such detail, his background of handling the integration issue in Nashua and being a AAA manager, a successful AAA manager in those years. So now he gets the job in Brooklyn, and now he's got all the veterans on the team, but he's got to establish himself, and he does. But it's interesting to see the contrast of Alston, the quiet reserve, the strong man, as opposed to someone like Leo Durocher, who eventually becomes his coach in 1962. So let's talk just very briefly about Alston and Durocher and how Alston handled Durocher, who was really just yapping away all the time about things that Alston did in the dugout.
It's true that Durocher, you can't imagine two more different kinds of characters than Durocher and Alston. Alston, as you say, the quiet man. Durocher, cut from the very opposite kind of mold. It's a stark contrast to psychology and the nature of the Durocher type, whether it's a John McGraw, a Billy Martin, a Leo Durocher. They're going to be out there with the press. They make good copies, so the press will seek them out for interviews. And so every little thing that Durocher wanted to bring up was going to end up in the headlines of all the sports pages. And, of course, in 62, with Leo as a coach, the situation was a great situation for the Giants fans, as it turned out, but a very tough one for the Dodgers because Koufax got hurt mid-season. He'd won 14 games into July, but then he came down with that numbness, Raynaud's condition that hurt his pitching fingers. Didn't pitch a winning game thereafter, and the Dodgers slumped. The Giants caught them. Great Giants team. There's no disgrace in losing to them, but in that fateful three-game playoff between the Dodgers and the Giants in 62, there were a couple of key moments where a pitcher could have been relieved, where a particular second baseman could have been positioned better, and Leo second-guessed Alston right after that game was over when the Dodgers were in their most forlorn state after losing this tough playoff series to the Giants. But despite that, Alston did not want Leo let go. Indeed, Bavese told Durocher that Alston went out of his way to tell Bavese not to fire Durocher, even though Durocher was mouthing off to the press. And according to Bavese, Leo was quite surprised that it was Alston who told Bavese, don't fire Leo, we'll keep him on. So that Leo was mouthing off, but Alston was just quietly letting it go and not worrying too much about it. He didn't like the loss to the Giants any more than anyone. He said, I'd rather have my teeth pulled. But he was willing to not second-guess himself and go in public. And if others did, he was just going to endure it and push on because there was only one answer to a situation that befell the Dodgers in 62, and that was to win the next year. And boy, did they ever. Because then Koufax wasn't hurt in 63, and all the Giants fans and Dodgers fans know the rest of what happened in 63.
Boy, what a story. I like learning about Walter Alston because the whole Giant-Dodger rivalry, he never grabbed the headlines. He was never one of those persons to do that. He platooned when he could platoon, even though it wasn't that popular in those days. And the other thing about Alston is one-year contracts. He said, look, if you don't want me, I'll go home. And it was one-year contracts from 1954 through 1976. He's a Hall of Famer. Alan Levy's our guest. Alan, as we wrap it up with you, the book is really informative. It's terrific. It's got so many parts of the Alston personality, the quiet dignity that he had. Is there anything that you learned about him in doing this book that you didn't know before as we say goodbye?
Well, there's several things that come to mind. The quiet man, often people look for something that must be hidden in him. And the answer is there's nothing hidden about Alston. He was who he was. He was the classic small-town kid from Ohio, a totally stable background, you know, anything but wealthy. Grew up very poor, but had a great happiness in his fundamental essence as a human being, a total love of family, dedication to community. And so that the solid grounding that he had beneath him was unshakable. And so that he was quite sincere, which is part of the issue of the one-year contracts, that if they don't want me and I can go home to Ohio, I'll be the happiest man in the world. And while he was at home, things about him that I didn't know, he was an incredibly good pool player. He could run 100 balls. He played some exhibitions with Willie Moscone. One of his prized possessions was a pool cue that Moscone inscribed and gave to him. He liked driving motorcycles. Owned several Honda 350s, and he was also a champion marksman at skeet shooting. 24 out of 25 was a bad score for him.
Well, from Alston to Lasorda, so that's a change there. And from Brooklyn to L.A., he still remained Walter Alston, and that's what I get from the book. So amazing years of baseball history, 2,000 wins or more, a Hall of Famer. Alan Levy, Alan, thanks so much for this work and for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, that is Alan Levy. Walter Alston is the book, McFarland Publishing, the book Tree Up in Montclair. I'm sure David could get it for you. All right, more coming up, KNBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader. Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Anything more I can do for you?